You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has recently introduced the 110 Ultralight. Savage has teamed up with Proof Research once again to craft a barrel specific for a purpose-driven firearm. At around 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory-blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel and melanite skeletonized receiver minimize weight for success on any mountain hunt. Now, I could go on and on about all the good things about this firearm, but what you need to do is go to savagearms.com, check out the 110 Ultralight. They have it available for the 308 Win Mag, the 270 Win Mag, the 28 Nosler, the 28 Ackley Improved, the 30-06 Springfield, and so on and so on and so on. They got it for just about any cartridge. So what you need to do is go to savagearms.com. Check this rifle out. It's a badass rifle. Savagearms.com.
This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bear. Get that bear in here.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there! Get him! Get him! Yeah, good boy!
Good boy, Ranger!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week do you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Anytime that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
In this episode of the Houndsman XP Podcast, we've got Luke Worthington coming to us from Gillette, Wyoming. I am still in the Houndsman XP Mobile Command Center from coming at you live from Kalispell, Montana. Still up here doing some work, but I did take some time to get with Luke Worthington. And Luke is an employee on a huge ranch in northeast Wyoming. And we're going to sit down and you're going to hear right away the energy that Luke Worthington has for life in general, but also more importantly, he has a high extreme attitude about his hounds. They are with him all the time. They go to work with him. He spends a lot of time with them. Man, we're going to hear how Luke uses his hounds on the ranch, and you're going to really enjoy this conversation with Luke. I mean, he's a guy that's just high energy and would be a guy that I think anybody would love to go share some time with in the mountains chasing bobcats and lions. And he's versatile with his hounds. He's using them for coon hunting. And just wait. You'll have fun with this conversation. Before we get there, we want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is our way of generating funds to keep the podcast on the air. And we have all kinds of cool stuff over there, from tailgate talks, there are like mini podcasts, to pro tips and videos and articles. And we also offer our Patreon supporters. And that was a really loud bong right there that I don't know that I'm going to be able to edit out. But, hey, we're going to send you codes for products like Paws Are Protected. Paws Are Protected. Build your pack from the ground up. Precondition those feet. Keep them in shape. Your dogs are going to be able to hunt more every day. And they're going to have tough feet and feet that can handle the rough conditions that we send our hounds into. So Paws Are Protected. Build your pack from the ground up. Also want to shout out to Big Frig. Big Frig is a premier cooler company. Check them out. We're going to be posting links soon where you can buy Houndsman XP merchandise right from the Big Frig site. You can order a cooler with our logo on the top. You can order tumblers with our logo on them. And we're going to be posting that up for you real soon. But do your homework now. Go check out Big Frig and their Badlands Series cooler line. We also want to give a shout out to Phone Scope and Scoped Industries, Pyro Putty. All those products are available to you at Scoped Industries. So check out Phone Scope. It's a way for you to hook up your phone to a spotting scope or binoculars and get some outstanding photos and record your hunts. Check out Stick Bow Outdoors at stickbow.com. Bart Hogg is down there in Virginia. He's hitting it hard right now with his hounds, bear hunting, and just getting after it down there. Extreme performance in Virginia. But Stick Bow Outdoors offers you a log book and a health records book. So another way for you to up your game to extreme performance. Bart was featured on the podcast. He talked about this hound log book and his hound records book. And if you're going to be in this thing, you got to do it smart. If you're going to be extreme, you got to track the progress. You got to be honest with yourself. And you can do that by logging your hunts using Stick Bow Outdoors Hound Log. Check them out at stickbow.com. If you're a Patreon member, you're going to get a code for 20% off of that product. So join us on Patreon. We're going to hook you up. And hey, I want to give a shout out to Lauren and Seth, who have been they're getting after it too. I know Seth's getting ready to ramp up that hunting buggy down there on the New Mexico prairies and bring us some more outstanding videos and photos from chasing hares with his speed dogs down there. And Lauren's been getting after it in the coon woods. The only thing I've been getting after is work, but I'm ready to wrap that up this week and get after it in the mountains and also back home. So hey, enjoy this podcast. I really want to thank every one of you for hanging in there with us during my adventure, I guess, business venture, and staying faithful and supporting us at Houndsman XP. You guys are great. We couldn't have this podcast without you. And one of the things that you can do to support us again is go to Patreon. And I want to shout out special to our Patreon supporters. You guys have been awesome. So check it out. Website, hxp.com. Learn how you can get involved at Patreon. And let's get into this interview with Luke Worthington. Enjoy, folks.
Nathan, you should take that cat in your room because he meows at me. I'm pegging him.
I'm back, Luke. Sorry about that, yeah. Man. I usually don't ever get out of the truck without having the Copenhagen on me, but Copenhagen is is crucial to podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yep. That.
Like I told you, I said, my wife goes to town. She goes, what do you need? I said, Copenhagen, dog food, and beer. And I'm good shape.
Yep. And with that, we're going to.
And she's rolling her.
With that, we are starting the podcast. And the voice you're hearing is Luke Worthington from Gillette, Wyoming. Welcome to the podcast, Luke.
Thanks, Chris.
So
nice to be on. Kind of a privilege to have you ask me to come on.
Oh, well, you know, after you made that comment the other day on social media, I called you out.
I knew that was what you were up to.
Now, Luke, tell us where we've just been kind of talking about country life and different stuff before we started the podcast up here, but tell us where you're at, where you're living, what your day-to-day life is like, Luke, because it's pretty cool.
Well, I live in northeastern Wyoming between Gillette and Buffalo, Wyoming. I'm a hired man for a ranch out here and punch cows and chase sheep and hunt and run my dog. That's about all I do.
Yeah. Yep. So that area right up.
Kill a lot of coyotes.
You're in prime coyote country right there.
We are, man. It's there's a lot of them. There's a lot to be had out here for them coyotes. That's for dang sure. Especially if I'm working for half cattle and half a sheep operation, and we're constantly on them coyotes, and they'll devastate a sheep herd. It's a big deal where we're at.
Yeah. Do you have black bears up in that country?
Nope. No bears. Usually, we've had lions come through in town and stuff, but it's a pretty seldom thing that happens around here. We have just a lot of coyotes and some bobcats.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
that's about it for predators and coons, you know, very few coon. But
I said up there, but from where I'm sitting, I can say down there, down in that country, because I'm up in Kalispell. I've been up here living the mobile home life in my camper, working up here in Kalispell. I'm going on 2 months now, and so now I can say down there, because I did get honked at and told to go back to Indiana the other day here in Kalispell.
They probably thought you're an antelope hunter.
I think they are so tired of seeing people here. Kalispell's, somebody told me the other day, it's the third largest, fastest growing city in the country right now.
No, really?
Yeah. And that's what's keeping me in business up here. And that's why I came up here, is because of the housing boom and the roofing opportunities for my roofing contractor business and stuff like that. So I just think the locals are sick of seeing people from out of town. And I told Larry, I said, man, I really wanted to switch plates on the truck eventually so that I don't have that. But yeah, but Luke, tell us about that ranch you're living on.
I work for it's three brothers that own this place, and it's a big place. We run 3,500 to 4,000 cow calf pairs, and probably 5,500 head of sheep as of right now. Probably, it's a big place. It's a probably just over 200 plus thousand acres, and a lot of BLM lease.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably deeded acres. And then with BLM, it's big. We lease a lot of BLM around here, and that's about it. It's a busy lifestyle. That's for dang sure, especially this time of the year. We're shipping calves and getting ready to work sheep off and get some lambs weaned and try to get all the babies out of here and get prepared for winter and start feeding all winter.
So if you were to drive across those deeded acres on that ranch, you know, and start on the south end and drive to the north end, how long would it take you?
Well, I live on the north end of this brother's place, and it's about 15 miles as a crow's fly.
Yeah.
And it takes me about an hour, about 45 minutes to an hour to leave my house and get to his doorstep.
And he lives where on the ranch?
He lives on pretty much the south side of what his dad originally got in the 50s.
Ah.
But this ranch is over 100 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a, you know what, the main reason for me working for this place is that there's no ranch managers. The managers are the owners,
mm-hmm.
and they're with you there. They're working side by side with you every day. They're not living in Tahiti calling you to barking orders at you. You know, they're right by your side.
They're not at their, every day. Yeah, they're not at their they're not at their winter home in Tahiti and telling you how you ought to be doing things on the ranch in Wyoming in December.
That's right, man. They're workers, and that's why I work for them, is because of that. Nobody likes to get barked orders from somebody who doesn't know what's going on, and these guys, they know what's going on. That's for dang sure, because they're there. They're there every day. So,
man, that's cool.
It's fantastic.
That's cool. That's a.
It is. It really shows. That really shows worth ethic, and that's why they've gotten as big as they've gotten, and they're the people who deserve that. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are jealous of them. How much is enough? And I was like, man, they work for it. They're not doing this stuff from Arizona. You know, they're up here in the cold. They're out there feeding. You know, it's a neat deal. It's a really, really cool deal. But
when I was coming back,
you don't see that very often.
Yeah, when I was coming back from, it must have been the Swan this year, Swan Valley in Montana. I was coming back and I got to Gillette, and there was it this year? It may have been this year. I can't remember if it was this year or last year, but all of a sudden, I mean, it just turned into a blizzard at Gillette, and that was dicey driving across 90 coming back through there into South Dakota and different stuff. That was the only part on the trip, and I thought, man, when you get to Wyoming, you start seeing the snow fence and all this other stuff, and you're thinking, whoever lives out here is either crazy or super tough, and we're talking to him now. So are you crazy or are you super tough? What's the answer to that question?
You know, we don't get the snowfall like people think we do. They think we're in 6 foot of snow, and it's not like that. It's windy. It's windy Wyoming.
Yeah.
And that's summertime. It's 90 degrees, and there's no wind. And then when it's cold, it is blowing 30 miles an hour, and just, it can snow an inch and look like there's no snow on the ground, but there's 6 foot drifts, you know, wind just howls in the wintertime and you can't get a break. When it's hot, you want a little bit of wind and it's still as can be. And then when it 30 below, it's blowing 30 miles an hour and you're like, man, give us a break.
Right.
Let's find a happy medium.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it never works out. It's just windy all the time.
It's definitely interesting country. I think the most desolate place, I guess last year when I came back from the Swan, I dropped from Gillette and went down to Cheyenne. And what road is that runs from Gillette down to Cheyenne? On the east side.
Well, if you went from Gillette, you probably took Highway 59, and then you jumped onto I-25 outside of Douglas.
Yes.
And you hit some, like, when you're going through Chugwater and Wheatland, and
I didn't go through anything.
You know, you can show up and you can see semis on their side, and that wind, man, it hammers them semis. It blows semis over constantly down there.
There wasn't anything in that country. I was amazed at how desolate that country was. I saw one cow, and I think he was lost. I think she was lost, you know. That's the only thing I saw going down through there, and it was crazy. I was thinking, and you see, right off the interstate, Wyoming's the only state I think I've been in where you can actually exit the interstate onto ranch access roads. You know, you don't have to hit. It's like right off of the interstate. It's not an exit ramp. It's nothing. It's like ranch access road ahead, and bang, you can turn right off the interstate and turn onto a dirt road going to a ranch.
Right.
It's wild. I think it's wild country for sure.
I love it because you can actually go, you can go 80 miles and not hit a town. That's pretty, pretty rare nowadays.
Is Wyoming's,
you know, even going through Montana, you can hit a town about every 36, 40 miles,
yep.
You know, Wyoming, you can cover some ground and not hit. There's not like between Gillette and, you hit Gillette and then right heading towards Cheyenne. And then from right to Douglas, you got a long jaunt, and a lot of people are running out of gas because they're used to hitting the town. And there ain't,
I was just
going to find a gas.
I was just going to say that. You better be paying attention to the gas gauge when you're driving that stretch of road right there, because there isn't anything out there. And
yeah, that's a fact.
You know, it's Is Wyoming still the most sparsely populated state in the United States besides Alaska in the lower 48? I think at one time it was like 6 people per square mile. Seems like I remember that.
I don't know what it is, but I still think we have less than 500,000 people. I think we might be over that now, but I don't know. I bet you it's 500,000 people in the state of Wyoming.
Yeah. And it's a big state. That's the thing. So it's a big state. It's not a small place.
Yeah, there's probably 10 antelope to one people. One person, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, probably 4 cows to one person. So.
Right. I'm going to Google it real quick. I got to know now. Wyoming pop.
Yeah, I bet you it's about 500. 564,000 is my guess.
How much? What did you say?
564.
According to the 2020 census, the total population for Wyoming is 549,000 people, 914. Yeah. There you go. There you go. And it looks like there's total male population is 279,175. So that means you guys are still outnumbering the women in Wyoming. So if you can find a woman in Wyoming, you better hang on to them because there aren't a whole lot to go around.
That's right. Yep, that's absolutely right.
Yep. Yep, that country that runs down through there where we were talking is so desolate. I mean, I heard there's a pretty girl behind every tree. You just can't find the tree.
That's exactly right, man. There ain't no trees around here. And if you are, they're hollow. So,
I was looking behind.
Broken down old cotton.
Yeah. Yep. Well, hey, let's talk about hounds and what you're doing with hounds out there in that country. Because it sounds like, are you using the hounds for, first off, let's just start off with what kind of hounds you got and, what got you into hounds, and we'll just have a general discussion about that, Luke. I've seen you on social media, and you know, I've talked to you a few times. We've messaged back and forth and stuff, but talk to us about Luke Worthington, the houndsman.
Okay, well, I bought a hound about 9 years ago, and he was a big old school black and tan.
Yeah.
And
do you remember?
I tried training him, and I was actually living in town at this time. I grew up on this ranch. And when I was a kid, and then I left because I was pipeline welding, and that was a lot of traveling and stuff. Well, we had a house there in Gillette, and I went and bought this old school black and tan. Me and my daughter actually went and picked this dog up. He cost $100.
Yeah.
Named him Rocky. And I tried training him and here and there, and never really committed to training a hound dog, you know. But I was trapping a lot. I like to trap coyotes and bobcats, and I trap anything, beavers. I do beaver projects for Game and Fish and beaver relocation and stuff. And so I started getting these bobcats caught, and I trap a bobcat, big old. I got it to where I could catch almost all tom bobcats. Kind of got it figured out on how to get away from catching the females, and started hammering these tom bobcats, and I would see another tom would come in and just whoop the crap out of the cat in the trap.
Yeah,
and then they'd be gone. And I was like, well, I got a hound dog, you know, let's, you know, I walked him down there and he saw that first bobcat in the trap, man. And that thing, I'm not going to lie to you. He was terrified, absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
You know, kind of cowering up. And I'm like, you're a wimp, you know, mm-hmm. Which wasn't the dog's fault. If I were to have him nowadays, I believe he would have been a brute, you know, because he was just kind of an honor old black and tan. But I started getting him away. I wouldn't show him the trap or the cat in the trap, but I'd find them traps that would come in and get that cat that I was trapping. And then pretty soon he was catching them. That other cat that come in, he'd go out there and catch it. And I was like, wow, this is, you know, this is pretty cool.
What made him transition from being afraid?
Most of them were.
What made him?
You know, I think that it was. Chris, I can't tell you. He would trail anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it was that cat in the trap, I think, just had him spooked, you know. But I would walk him out to just the tracks, and sure enough, I came home one day, and I told my wife, Abby, I said, I caught this one. There was tracks leaving, so I put that black and tan on there, and I said, he caught it.
Did he catch
it? You know, and I shot it with a .22 pistol.
Catch it on the ground.
What?
He would catch it on the ground, or he'd ledge it?
He baited up. Yeah. Yep, baited up. Yeah, it was on a ledge. It was kind of on an embankment, you know, and he was kind of on the edge of it, but he's keeping his distance. Dogs I have now, man, you talk about a vet wreck. You know, yeah. But he was keeping his distance, and, you know, and I was like, yeah, hell of a job, you know, and I'd get it shot, and I'd have to hang on to him, you know, a little gun shy, and did that a couple times, and then he kind of trail up coons and never really went strictly coon hunting. You know what I mean?
Right.
Never just like got the dog out and went coon hunting. It was always kind of like a trap line dog. And then a few years later, we were offered this place to move back out here, and we made the move, and I just started piling up the hounds. It was, and, I found an ad in the paper, or I know I found an, I don't remember where I saw that ad for these blue tick Walker cross pups. And, so I was like, this is the deal to get another dog in this house is to go up. My wife's birthday is October 7th. It was yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to go pick up this puppy and I'm going to get her this dog to make it hers, you know?
Oh, that's a great plan.
And I got off of work, and I was like, man, I'm going to go get this dog. This dog was $50.
Yep.
I think she cost $50. And I went there on her birthday. She actually had the flu on her birthday, sitting in the house on the couch, sicker than all get out. And I drive to Pine Haven, Wyoming, little tiny dinky hound, meet this guy at this small town grocery store. And I told him, I said, pick me out a female. And he sent me a picture, a couple of them. I said, I want that all blue one. Well, I went to pick the dog up, and she was mostly black, you know.
Yeah.
Not the dog that I picked out over the picture.
Of course not.
I was hooked on blue ticks, man. As soon as I got that dog in the truck, I was like, I like this blue tick.
Yeah.
You know, so she was half blue tick, half walker, and got her home, gave her to my wife, and, you know, she was an absolute terrorist. She was
let's stop.
Out of control. No,
before we get into talking about this dog, what ahead. Was your wife's reaction to getting a hound dog pup for her birthday? I've got to know this part.
No, she loves him, man. You know, if I could give one hound guy a quick tip.
There you go.
If your wife don't like your dog, you have a big freaking problem. you know, I have a good buddy I hunted with, and he got rid of all his dogs because of his wife. And if your wife doesn't approve of it, you got to get something figured out. So if your wife ain't supporting you, you probably ain't going to do very good.
So what you're saying is
much time hunting.
You need to get a new wife.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Don't get rid of your dog. Just go. Go trade in the wife. As my wife's sitting here shaking her head going, you don't know what you just said.
I would say the same. If my wife.
No, that's.
Yeah, my wife has heard the same thing. So I'm not sure that my wife would be as graceful about getting a hound pup, because this is usually my MO. Okay, so when the kids were small, it's like, oh, well, I'll take the kids and let them pick out a puppy. Well, my wife already knew that game. She was like, yeah, you went and got the kids a puppy
yeah.
for you to hunt. Yeah, I get it. And she's got me all figured out. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead and resume your story there, Luke.
So I went in and I went to that small town, got this blue tick, brought it back. My wife's throwing up on the couch, you know. And I gave her this little blue tick pup, and that pup just curls up with her.
Oh, yeah.
And cuddles with her all day. And she goes, I love her. We end up naming her Lizzie. And we name her Lizzie, and that dog was a terrorist, man. She wouldn't tear stuff up, but she was gone. She would go outside and just go to trailing. And, you know, I think when that dog was 12 weeks old, which I've never seen it since, but that dog would start smelling something in it. She would start opening a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And she just, it was phenomenal. And I was like, wow, this is what a real dog can do, you know, because I completely ruined that black and tan. I'm going to straight up say it. It was inexperience and negligence is what ruined that dog. It wasn't the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it completely different with this dog. I took her with me every day, and I raised her in the house, and she was just good. She caught her first coon. I was out doing a beaver trapping job, and she ran. It was winter time. She goes trailing through them cattails, and she's this ball, and she had the most beautiful ball mouth. Just that nice, clean ball, and all of a sudden, she gets this coon jumped out of these cattails, and she trees it instantly. Just belly up, just straight up the tree, and me and my little boy Parker was, he's trapped with me since he was a year and a half old, and Lizzie has a coon, you know.
Yeah.
Went and I was like, we got to shoot it out. So I shot it out, and she went to, you know, as soon as it hit the ground, she jumped back. And I think it was 6 or 7 months old. And she went to pulling hair on that thing. And I threw it up there on a down tree and took a picture with her and my little boy. And since that day, that dog was even a bigger terrorist, you know.
Yeah.
She was out hunting. She's like, okay, I got this figured out. And then by the time she was, before she was a year old, she was out there catching. I take her coon hunt, run these river bottoms and creek bottoms. We weren't catching coons. You would, you know, that one year I hunted 2 times a week, all spring, all summer, into the fall, and I caught 6 raccoons. That's how slim the coons were.
Wow.
Well, she treats 7 bobcats that summer.
Mm.
she was just pounding them things. And I'm like, she would take off through the hills, you know, and then she'd have a bobcat caught. And I'm like, man, this is really impressive.
Yeah.
You know, because it's summertime, it's hot, and she was just hammering them cats. And so winter comes on, and by now I have another blue tick pup, and I got this old black and tan, this high tan black and tan female dog. It's a Finnish dog that I bought from some guy. And you know how that goes. You buy a puppy, you can get a Finnish dog for the same price. So I was a sucker to all that stuff. And I went and got that another blue tick pup and bought that high tan and threw her in there. And she was a coon hunter, man. That dog, if she opened, she was always chopped, but if she opened up, you knew what it was.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, she has a coon, but that blue female would take it over, and she was so fast. And
must have been the walker,
take it
in
over,
right?
And usually get it put up. And you know, I don't know what it was, but ever since that dog was a pup, she was looking up. There was no, it was completely instinct treeing is what she had. It was awesome.
I say that as a joke. So then, I say that as a joke about the walker, because everybody's like, oh, blue ticks are slow, blue ticks are this. And just depends on the blue tick you're hunting, really, and what line of blue tick you're hunting. If you can find them where they're old and slow,
yeah.
You know, they're slow and mopping tracks and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, it's like saying all walkers are slick terriers. I've seen some pretty good walkers in my day too, so.
Oh yeah, I think there's good dogs in all of them, man. I don't really think that it's I actually think it's in the beholder, you know. I think it's in the hand of the handler, and if you can spend the time with them and keep them going and don't get frustrated and be like, "Damn trashy buggers," because I have some trashy dogs.
Well, that's why I'm talking to you.
They can trash out, and it's
that's why I wanted to have you on here, because you are such a versatile houndsman. You know, if you go east, then guys get crazy if a dog runs a coyote, or they, you know, or they want them strictly coon dogs, and you're hunting whatever you put your dogs on. That's what you're hunting, right?
Yeah, and I have a plot hound. He's a muscle man. This dog is like nothing I've ever seen. He's this pure muscle, but I let my dogs out every single day. When I come home, I let them out for at least 2 hours a day. I throw collars on them and I kick them out and I do my stuff. I do my chores or come in and eat dinner with the family and stuff, and I just let them run.
Yeah.
And because I was having a problem with roading them, trying to get them exercise, you know, all them old guys say, "Oh, you need to road them. You need to get in your pickup or four wheeler, whatever, and push them, make them go 4 to 6 miles a day. That'll keep them in shape." Well, you go blind hunting, and them dogs are covering country, and we got places where you can get around road to road, and I'd jump in the pickup and take off, and then I'd have 6 hounds chasing me down.
Mm.
And I was like, "What is going
yeah.
on?" They were so used to me roading them that when that pickup started, they're like, "Okay, let's go. He wants us to chase him."
Yeah.
You know, or he wants us to run with him.
Right.
So I quit doing that. I quit roading dogs. And it was one of them learning curves, you know, for me. And I that's kind of what I figured out. I know there's guys that are going to send us hate mail over that, but it's that's just something I found out with my dog.
Yeah.
That spending that time on a four-wheeler and pickup, they relied on it because they're like, "I'm going to go where you're going."
Mm-hmm.
So I quit doing that, and I'm just free casting them and say, "Go have fun. Go chase stuff. Go catch something." And we have a feral cat issue around these parts.
Yeah.
they can catch some feral cats, and it's great. Hell, it's great for them.
Yeah.
Get out there and get trailing in them creek bottoms, you know, and like days like this, it was 90 something degrees. Well, that's not true. It was 88 degrees today.
Wow.
And they can go out there and they'll grind on it, grind out it in the evenings, and they'll tree. And if they stay treed for a little while, I'll go down there and check, and I'll come home and Abby, my wife Abby, she goes, "What'd they have?" I said, "They had a feral cat."
Hmm.
They had a cat up in the top of the cottonwoods, or they caught a coon, or, you know, it's, I don't know. I just kind of let them do their own thing. But when it comes time to hunt and you put them in that dog box, they know what's going on. You know, they're not going to, they're completely trash broke from deer and antelope and livestock. Because where I live, you cannot have a dog chasing sheep or a horse
right.
or cows or deer antelope. You know, you got to have them broke or you're not going to have a place to hunt.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But
and I think that,
I found out I have a problem with skunks. Skunks are a big issue here. Porcupines are a big issue, which my wife's glaring at me now because we just got back from the vet today.
Oh, you had a porcupine catch, huh?
Because of them dang porcupines.
Yep.
Oh, man. It's, you know, yesterday I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We shipped a bunch of calves yesterday, and I had to be there early to get them in the corrals, and I was up at 5, out the door at 5:45, and I was driving down the county roads last night in the dark, and I come around the bend, and I see a coon dive into the grass, you know, because just our roads have grass. Nothing else has grass.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh, I'm going to go home and eat dinner with the family and stuff." And I said, "I'm going to grab them dogs because I know exactly where it crossed." I was like, "I'm going to dump these dogs on that coon." I said, "We'll get them caught." And I told my wife, I said, "I'll be back in 20 minutes. 20 minutes, I'll be back." So I load dogs up and go out there, and I'm within about 20 yards where I saw that coon, quotation marks, dive in the grass.
Ah.
Went out there and dumped them dogs, and I had my youngest pup opened up. And I looked at them other dogs and hunt them up. Boom, they were gone. They were trailing single file line, you know, and I heard they're kind of chopping. And I was like, oh no. Then they go up this embankment. I pull out a spotlight, and this embankment's 50, 60 foot tall, and I see something fall off of it. And I thought it was my youngest dog, Maggie. And so I sprinted down there as fast as I could, and it's a damn porcupine.
Ooh.
And I'm shocking dogs and yelling at them, and I only had two of my males get them, but I had one. I had a couple quills down in the canine, and I got my dogs are all 70-pound dogs, my males, and I have one male blue tick that's 90 pounds, and then females are about 50 and 60 pounds, and so he's pretty hard to handle. I had him head and heeled, and I couldn't get him out, so I had to run him into the vet this afternoon and had him yank it out real quick, but it was free of charge because I'm on the Gold Star membership at that vet clinic, I believe. I asked him, I said, when am I going to get shares in this company?
Yeah.
I said, I'm sure him here a lot.
Yeah.
You guys take a lot of my money.
Well, tell us about your lion season, your bobcat hunting, you know, those sort of things, Luke, because I know that, you know, in previous conversations we've had, that's what you really enjoy doing. And are you using the hounds for predator control on the ranch? And, you know, let's get into that part a little bit. We'll start with the ranch part. Do you, since they're with you all the time, are you using them for predator control on the ranch?
I do. I use them for coyote retrieval. They really don't trail a coyote. Like if it's a snow track, they won't trail it.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of coyote trapping and coyote calling, and if I wound one, they sure will trail it up and get it baited up. They retrieved 16 wounded coyotes for me last year. And usually when I go out feeding, I take one or two dogs with me all the time, hoping we'll cut a nice old bobcat track. And that's what I really enjoy doing is chasing bobcats.
Yeah.
That's my top of the list, because them things are snaky on the prairie. Because they know where every hole is. They'll pass up every single tree to get to a hole. And they put on some pretty exciting races. And it's a lot of fun.
So what does it take? What does it take in your country out of a dog, out of a hound, to be able to put a bobcat in a tree? If you can tree a bobcat, do you tree many, or seems like most of them you're catching are holing up or going to the rocks?
They're holing up. Most of them are holing up. We've treed quite a few in trees, and they like to tree on them. The trees that are right next to an embankment, and they climb up to the very top of that tree and they bail out right back on the prairie and they are checking out.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time you have to help the dog in that kind of the country, because they're treed and they can't see up them. We have ponderosas out here in juniper in some of these draws, and you know, and they know it went up it. And, but you know, a lot of them cats will climb up to the top and jump across. They'll get back on them flats and they'll be booking it.
Yeah.
And they ain't stopping because they know that country and they know where them holes are at.
Yeah.
So they'll put a heck of a race on.
So if you get,
it's a lot of fun.
If you get dogs treed and you get in there and you see there's not a bobcat in a tree, then what's the next thing you do?
As soon as I have figured out now, if they're treed, I come up above it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most of the time they're next to a steep hill. So I'm coming in through the top, because if it's going to jump, it's jumping to them dogs.
Yeah.
And then they're going to put so much pressure on it, it's going to do something. It's going to go right back up a tree, or it's going to bay up in the sagebrush.
Yeah.
So I found out now that I need to come up from the top, and that will hold him from jumping, because that bobcat's not going to jump to me. They're not like a lion where they'll jump out to a person, but them bobcats are pretty, pretty timid little creatures, and they like to just use their camouflage to hide from you mostly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I learned to do, and not many of them will jump down into them dogs.
Right.
So it's
You can hold them in a tree.
That seems to work out pretty good for getting them.
So if you circle around and you come in from that tree high, you've learned that you can hold the bobcats in the tree that way. That's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah, because they know they live there 24/7. You know, they know how to get away from stuff.
Yeah.
So that's just what I figured out, and a lot of people disagree with that. You know, like, you're going to push them out, but I promise you, if they jump down to them dogs, it's going to – that cat's coming home with me.
Right, right. How many hounds at a time are you hunting on,
you know, you got
bobcat?
I hunt all my dogs together all the time.
How many is that? What's your count?
I have five right
okay.
now. Okay. I have five. Yep.
You got one plot. What else you got?
I got a plot. Harold's High Lonesome.
If you ain't got a plot, you ain't got a lot. We'll just get that out there right now. Right?
Everybody needs to have one plot in their pack. If you ain't got a plot in your pack, man, you're missing a lot of excitement. Because them things are made for endurance, man. They can run with the... There ain't nothing like them plots, man. They have more endurance than any of them dogs.
Yeah.
He's a powerhouse. And, you know, he's a completely silent dog. That plot is silent, and his name's Hank. And if you hear Hank open up, he saw whatever he's chasing. And when Hank opens up, he's going to be the first dog to that tree every single time.
Hmm.
But he's completely silent. And as soon as it's on the jump, you'll hear him just boom, and then it's treed. Because he was that close to it, and he's pretty neat. A lot of people don't like that silent dog, but he's the only one in the pack that's silent. You know?
Right.
So he's running with a bunch of blue ticks. So
yeah,
you know how that goes.
Yep. Yep. So.
And then I have two pups that were out of that female Lizzie I was telling you about.
Okay.
I bred her to a English male, and I got 10 pups out of that deal. And I sold three to a guy who works for the Wyoming Game and Fish. And I sold one to probably one of the best lion hunters I know in the state, and that would be Aaron Curlin. He took one. He took a red tick pup that dropped out of there.
Yeah.
And she's a superstar for that guy. And I sold, I have a really skittish pup, super timid dog. I gave him away to my sister-in-law and brother-in-law. And then they have that as a house pet.
Okay.
I got one to a dog that's a FEMA dog, getting trained to be a FEMA dog. And then I have one I sold to a guy in South Dakota for a shed hunting dog.
Really?
So it was pretty wild. And then I kept two pups, kept the prettiest dang blue tick dog that was in there. His name's Cash. He's that 93 pounder freak of nature hound that I have. And then the female pup, we actually found her outside dead on the ice. She was born outside and was froze down, and I came inside and threw her in their trash can. And I was like, that's probably not a good place for her. So I put her in a grocery sack and put her on the counter. And daughter comes out and says, Dad, I hear a cat. And I was like, what? She says, I hear a kitten. So I go over there, and that pup was chirping. So handed her off to the wife, and she heated towels up and brought her back to life, got her nursing. So we kept her.
Wow.
And she's a phenomenal dog. I told my wife, I said, we're not keeping this dog. There's something wrong with her. She'll never turn out.
Right.
And I was bound and determined for that.
You thought that because mom had kicked her out of the box? Is that what you thought?
No, my female went after that high tan, ran her down and was fighting her because she was getting ready to nest, and she came uncorked, man. That was one mean mama dog.
Yeah.
But she was pushing everything out of her way because she knew she was going to have pups, and she dropped that pup out there.
I'll be darned.
And that puppy was out there for about an hour on the ice, and I was like, it's for sure dead. But nope, we brought her back to life. Her name's Rose. She's an amazing dog. I can't believe it. But she is one heck of a dog. Good trailer, heck of a tree dog. It was it was my wife's miracle puppy, and that was her dog too.
Yeah.
And now she's mine.
So tell me, let's circle back around. I want to ask you about that FEMA dog. That's just kind of an interesting thing. I think everybody knows what a shed hunting dog is, but what are the expectations that are being, you know, were they training that pup for? Or what did they train it for?
I think they're going to train it. They're training it for, I believe, search and rescue.
Okay. Yeah.
To find people, and like if a disaster happened, they'll be able to use that dog to find them, to find people that are injured or something. I really don't know much about it. So
yeah,
I know she made the Gillette paper.
For what?
And she made the Gillette for being the first FEMA dog up here in northeastern Wyoming.
Okay.
In training.
Probably, so that was, probably search, that was kinda neat. Search and rescue stuff, like, you know, somebody from Indiana cuts down 25 there and runs out of gas and tries to cut across country and gets lost. Right?
That could be,
yep,
it, man. That could be it. I don't know nothing about that stuff. So
yeah, that's just an interesting thing. I think that's pretty cool that somebody took one of your pups to do that. I wanted to circle back around to it. So
yeah, I thought it was pretty neat.
I'm curious about something. So you wake up in the morning, you're going out to feed, or you're doing, you know, you're working your cattle or your sheep or whatever your, you know, your job is that day. Do you just throw dogs in the truck with you and go, or are they riding
yeah,
up front with you?
If I'm going out gathering. Oh yeah. Yep. I throw them. If I'm feeding cows, I have tall hay bales. And my feed route most of the year is about 115 miles is what I feed during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I grab one or two dogs and I throw them in the front seat with me. And, you know, they just sit there looking out the front window the whole time, just looking for something. And every time I stop, I kick them out. And, you know, most of the time they stay really close. They got a really good handle on them. They listen really well. And because that's what I want. I want a dog that listens good and has a really easy recall, and but can still get out there and get with it, you know.
Yeah, so you just treat them like ranch dogs.
I take them with me feeding. Yeah, I treat them like pets. They all live in a kennel.
Yeah,
they all have their own kennels down there, and they do live outside. That Lizzie dog, she lived inside.
Mm-hmm.
And but that living inside, I'm all about it. So I'm not criticizing anybody that has a dog inside. I think it's fantastic. But she was always cold. In the wintertime, she never got a winter coat. She stayed really thin in the hair, and she was always cold, you know.
Yeah.
Her feet got cold, and them dogs that are climatized, that's probably the only reason they're out there, is to climatize, and, you know, and it's, I think that's important.
And same thing with,
I think they should be outside if they're going to be hunting in the cold.
And same thing with heat. You know, you let a dog lay around in the air conditioner all the time, and then you take them out when it's hot, they're going to be more prone to overheating as well, I believe.
Yep, that's exactly right.
I don't have a thing against raising puppies in the house and things like that, but eventually that dog's got to learn its place, you know, and there's nothing wrong. Me personally, you know, I used to be a canine handler. I've said that on the podcast before, I know. But at the end of the day, after you ride around with a dog all day, that dog was happy to have its space and me have my space. And it was a good combination that way. And we kept everything in check. Yeah. But I think dogs that are going to be out in that kind of weather, if you bring them from the wood stove and then they go out on a cat track, and for whatever reason they've got to stay out there for a day or 2 days. If they're not climatized, you're asking for problems. And it doesn't matter if you're hunting raccoons in in Indiana. You know, dogs get lost then too. So
Yeah, you can definitely tell a dog that lives inside when it gets out in that snow and it's carrying its feet everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, pretty soon it's hopping on three legs and it's swapping legs. Yep. And you're like, that dog's feet are cold. And then you have them out there and in the cold, which mine are not. They have a 6x6 insulated hut with a doghouse inside.
Yeah.
So they're double protected. I put their water in there, and it can be – when it gets below zero, yeah, their water freezes.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have that doghouse inside of that hut, and it was 25, 30 below. And you worry about them dogs, you know. You're like, it is freaking cold. Wind's hawking. And I would go down there, and I packed it full of straw, you know, and you go down there, and they're – it is 110 degrees inside that doghouse.
Yeah.
They're completely warm, and you're like, I don't need to worry about these things, you know. It's they got it figured out. But
okay, so we had to –
they're staying warm. I have it set up really nice.
You're holding dogs and housing dogs outside in extreme conditions here. So we had this discussion on the podcast a few months ago maybe. About doghouse sizes. What size doghouses are inside those insulated huts?
So I mentioned my females. I have a female Maggie that I got from the Aaron Curlin. She is about 50 pounds. She's the smallest dog I own. Female, 60, 65 pounds. My males are plotting that Harold's High Lonesome Blue Tick. They're about 75 pounds, and then I have that 90-pound dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I have dog houses made for medium-sized dogs. And
thank you very much.
You know, it's...
Why do you do that?
Them big old dogs can... Because then they can hold their body heat.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's... the bigger it is, the more that heat's gonna get away from the dog, and it's gonna make that dog cold. They need to confine that heat and use it as a heater, you know, and they need to be able to heat themselves. And I have a prime example of this. Me and my little boy, Parker, we went lion. We have a lion area open in the Bighorn Mountains. It's open all year long, unlimited quota. So in the summertime, the end of July, we'll fly up to the mountains and we'll go try to bear ground lion hunt. And this year we went up there and right off the bat, we got up there that night, Friday night, woke up Saturday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. We started pounding ground, free casting dogs. I took a young pup and then my two pups off Lizzie's. They're probably a year and a half old. And then a 10-month old puppy went up there and I took my plot. So he was the oldest of them. He's about 3 years old, took him up there and they started trailing real good. And they end up jumping a bear and had to get them out of it. We cannot run bear in the state of Wyoming. And there's a lot of campers and stuff up there that got the dogs called off and went back and checked the creek. And sure enough, there's a lion track in there. So I put them back on it and they trailed it for about an hour and a half, kind of having a really hard problem with it. And anyways, we call the dogs off, head back to camp, and we had a hailstorm. And I tell you what, that temperature went from about 60 degrees to about 35, soaked the ground. We're frozen. We're wet. And them dogs have so much body heat. I had them on a tie out. And I brought them inside the tent. I was like, man, we packed dogs in there. And that night, we had the windows open. We had the door screen open. Them dogs were, they heated you up, you know. Yeah. And that's a prime example how much body heat them dogs can do. Just like people leave their dogs in a dog box at a motel in the wintertime. People are like, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, you got three dogs in a dog box, that place is more comfortable than that cheap motel room you're renting. I can guarantee you that.
Dogs have metabolic rates that people don't understand. And when you try to... You know, you see people that treat their dogs like they're humans, and it's just not natural for that dog. The dog is capable of heating and cooling itself, and we let the human emotion come into that where we think, well, I wouldn't be comfortable out there. Well, your system is not set up like a dog's system. They are supposed to, they are designed to endure that sort of stuff. So it drives me crazy. And I'm glad to hear some, you know, from a guy like you that's housing dogs in those extreme conditions. That's exactly what I've told people. You know, you put that big canine condo out there and you think he's going to stretch out in it. It's not happening. You're doing more harm for that dog than you are.
No, he's cur.
Yep. Curled up.
Yep. You got that big canine condo out there, and that dog's curled up in the corner,
trying to stay warm.
Going, man, I just need some warmth. It's impossible. But yeah, it's medium sized dog houses for big dogs. Keep them tight, and they like it. If it's too hot for them in the summertime, they lay outside.
Yes.
You know, you'll go down there. I go down there at about 10:30 at night to go get them to go coon hunting. And they're all freaking sprawled out, you know, laying. And I wet their – I have a dirt floor kennel. And I go down there and spray it down with water. And they're pretty potty trained in that thing. Because I have the – like I said, I live with them. So I go down there in the morning. I let them out. They go to the bathroom. They're not contaminating their kennels by crapping and peeing everywhere in there. You know, it's pretty clean.
Right.
And they got it figured out where they're pretty much potty trained in that kennel.
Yep.
You leave them there for a couple days, you know, they'll use their outside kennel as a bathroom, but I kill it. I go down there about once a month and I kill the ground up and, you know, it stays really fresh, but I'm also not letting them go to the bathroom on it. And I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
With having dirt, you know, I'd really like to have concrete. But then again, it's, you know, the dirt's fine. It's keep it clean. That's the biggest thing to fight parasites and stuff.
Right.
Ear infections with the dust and stuff. And I've ran into that. I've had ear infections because of the dirt, having extremely dirty ears and stuff. But you stay up on hound maintenance, on cleaning their ears out and keeping their kennels pretty much dust free, keeping that dust settled down. They can live on that dirt ground, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your ground's a little bit different there than I've noticed out here in Montana, completely different ground. You know, you put water on this ground, you can put a lot of water on this ground and it just soaks it up. If you put a lot of water on the ground where I'm at, then you get mud and you get, I mean, serious mud. Springtime is just muddy and the dog's feet get soft in it and stuff. So depending on where you live and the soil composition you have, makes a big difference on that for sure.
Yeah. Our soil is, if we get an inch of rain, it just runs off.
Yeah.
if we got an inch of rain, we got a flood.
Yeah.
You know, our grounds just don't take the water.
Yeah.
But it's hard ground, a lot of bentonite, you know, really slimy, nasty. It rains, you know, a couple tenths of an inch and you're slipping around like you're in the gumbo in Louisiana, you know, you're just like, my gosh, this is a nasty mess. You can't stay on the road.
Yeah. Some of these construction sites up here right now, I mean, running equipment, it's like moon dust, you know, it's just, and it gets rained on, and then it turns into slime. But by the next day, it's gone, you know.
Yeah.
It's packed down and ready to get churned up again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
Tell us about lion hunting in Wyoming. I got some questions. I've heard that there's a lot of different type laws in Wyoming for a person that comes out there and lion hunts about how long you can stay at the tree and different stuff like that. Do you have any insight on that?
Repeat that question.
So I've heard that once you have a lion in a tree in Wyoming, there's only a certain amount of time limit that you're allowed to stay at that tree to make the decision whether you're going to take the cat or you're going to pull off of it and go somewhere else once you arrive there. Is there any truth to that, or what's your experience with that?
I believe the regulations say if the lion is treed upon arrival, you must decide whether to release the lion or take the lion. I don't believe it might say immediately release.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure on what the regulations say, but I don't think that they're gonna, I don't think there's a time like you have to decide within 2 minutes.
Okay.
You know,
right.
I don't know that. I think you need to do it reasonably. If you treat a female and kittens, I believe it is law that you need to get out of there. You need to get dogs out of there and let them go on.
Right.
And that's that. Just in that anyway.
Yeah.
If you treat a female with kittens, you're going to get dogs and get out of there. Because none of us want to see them kittens get hurt and harass a female. You just, I think all of us up here are doing that. Once we treat something, we do snap a couple picks and we get out of there.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and in the state of Wyoming, it is against the law to shoot a cat with Spot.
Right. I think that's pretty standard.
It is. Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah.
But, and you cannot release dogs on multiple lion tracks. Like if there's a female kitten, I don't believe you can legally put your dogs on.
I have read that regulation.
And if you're free casting, like say it's kind of bare ground and you free cast into a canyon and they jump a kitten and female, it's kind of your responsibility to get down there and get dogs out of there. Because if you do release off a road and there's a female kitten, you're most likely going to get a ticket.
Right.
If they do that, and if your dog killed the kitten and you called it in, they're going to come check on you. They're going to be like, where'd you release your dogs? And if there's three sets of tracks there and you know it's a female kitten, so you better not be letting your dogs out.
Right. Right. Yeah, I did read that specific regulation about when there's evidence to show, I think it's worded, when there's evidence to show that there's a female with kittens, it's illegal to pursue that lion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You said it a whole heck of a lot better than I did.
Yeah. Well, that's the legal side. You know, that's just the legal experience on that. So, Well, Chase, tell us about the bobcat hunting, and do you guys have a lot of bobcats or?
We do. Our mountains have a lot of bobcats that are extremely hard to catch. Because in the Bighorn Mountains to the west of me, there's a lot of outcroppings, rock outcroppings, and 90% of the time, that's where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to run into them rock crops, and they're going to get away from you. And but like the eastern side of the state, next to South Dakota, them bobcats like to tree. You know, they actually tree fairly good, and they're a blast to chase. That's my most favorite thing right there is hunting them Black Hills for bobcats. And I don't take them. I take a few, and you know, I get a big tom, I'm going to take him. But you know, you can run young cats, you can run females, it doesn't matter. It's an unlimited amount of bobcats you can kill in the state of Wyoming. So I think it's up to the hunters that be selective, because it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to make any money or whatever, because everything, because like I said, I grew up in the trapper world and everybody wants bobcats. But I said, when you're catching kittens, why catch a cat you can't sell when you can go out there and catch five coyotes? Go catch them coyotes. They're worth more money than them baby bobcats.
What is a Western?
Keep them big old.
What's a Western Wyoming coyote bringing now? On the market?
You know, I killed 102 coyotes last year from November till March. And that's trapping and hunting, shooting them off my feed grounds. You know, I shot a lot out of the pickup, shooting them off them calving grounds, and they really don't hurt our cows. They're not calf killers.
Yeah.
they will kill calves, but you release a dog into the middle of our cows, you got your dog better be fast because them cows are going to hunt him down. You know, that's just a Western cow.
Yeah.
They're ornery. And so, yeah, they go out there and they'll follow them. They go get up there on the feeding grounds where them cows are calving, and they love eating that afterbirth. You know, they'll be out there
sure.
stomping on that stuff or stillborn, you know, and man, that's a heck of a good place to pull up and get to some coyote shot. But anyways, back to your question, it was last year, my first sale of furs, I averaged over $90 a piece for them coyotes, and that's put up, that skin fleshed and put up. And the second, you know, once that Corona stuff started coming on, hearing rumor about it, that hurt the fur market, and then it dropped it down to about 75.
Right.
Is what I averaged that second sale, but that's the most, that's the highest price coyotes I've ever sold. And of course, that's an average.
Sure.
Which for an average price, that's awesome.
Yep.
Because I was selling, there was some that would go for 150 and then some that would go for $40, you know, and them $40 coyotes will kill an average.
Yeah.
Same with the cats.
We'd love to hit $40 coyotes in the East. You just don't, yeah, $40 is a good price for a coyote in the, you know, from the East, for sure.
Yeah. And then I have the benefit also of my boss is a pilot. His wife is a commercial pilot. His son's a commercial pilot. And we have a helicopter, and we do a lot of flying for the county predator. And I get a gun for him quite often, and we gun a lot of coyotes. And that's a good day picking coyotes up there.
I bet.
And I like to use them dogs for that, too. Because you can wound one, and them dogs will get it found. That plot's really good at it.
So are you flying him?
He's a really – what's that?
Do you fly him with you?
Nope. I leave him in the truck.
Oh, okay.
I leave him in the truck or go home and get him.
Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of the time I just go, if I have a problem, I'll go back the next day and that dog can pick up that blood. You know, that blood's pretty strong. And that's mostly what he's trailing is that blood. And it's, you can get him found pretty easy.
Yeah. So what's your average bobcat race? We're kind of jumping around here, but we were talking about bobcats and I sidetracked you on coyotes. I apologize for that. So from what's your average length of race on a bobcat out there?
Oh man, it could be a layup.
Yeah.
It could just be a dump them and tree it. You know, it could be a 30-second deal. It can be a 10-minute deal. Or last year, that Lizzie dog and this Chaka dog, I cut him out on a track at about 7:45, around there, 7:45, 8 o'clock, and we did not get that bobcat jumped until afternoon, probably about 12:30 or so.
Wow.
They jumped it, and them old blue ticks grinded it, and they were shocked. So I went back and got a plot and a couple pups and dumped them in front of them, and that plot's the one that caught him, and it took us 6 hours to catch him.
After he was jumped, or from the time he...
That was start to finish.
Gotcha.
And that's probably the longest I've allowed a dog to pursue a track.
Yeah?
Because after a while, you know, I found 4 scratches on that. You know, where I knew it was a Tom, and he was scratching, and we were in his hunting ground, so them dogs are sitting there doing circles.
Right.
Just barely moving. And I can tell every rock pile, he went from this rock pile to that one, to that juniper tree. That, and it was just, so I was trying to help him out. I walked with him and got ahead of him, and I'd call him over here and get it going. And then I just constantly walked with him and helped him out. Cause it was a hard track.
Yeah.
And we actually got one that morning before that, and it took 30 minutes. Right at daylight, I found a little bobcat track to the point where you knew it was a smaller cat. And I ran it anyways. We holed it up, and I could have reached in there and grabbed her, you know. It was a small cat, and I just called them off, and we went and found another one. And that was the longest race I've probably ever allowed the dogs to pursue.
Yeah.
But
that's still
in, most of them, I would say it takes you a couple hours to on the prairie to get one jumped and get it caught if you do catch it. But like I told you the other day, it's not, my percentage per catching is not very good. And everybody's like, you catching 80%? I was like, no. I said, I say out on the prairie, I'll catch 40% of the tracks I put them on. And that's just because of the cold trailing, and our winter is snow at night, and by 9:30 or 10, it's going to melt off.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that different. And once that snow melts, them dogs are done. You know, they're having a hard time, and they can maybe track the shade patches, but that's about it.
Yep. Yep. That makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Well, Luke, we've been rolling here for a good conversation, and if you got anything you want to tell the Houndsman XP world before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, I do. I would like to, I think to me, what I have figured out about my dogs is that the more time you can spend with them, and I try to tell people this, but nobody wants to listen to anybody. No, you know, take it for what it is. But I believe every minute you spend with that dog is training time. Every single second you're with that dog, you're training that dog. No matter if it's good habits, bad habits, whatever you do with that dog is 100% training. And if you can build a bond with that dog and spend a lot of time with them, they'll get to the point where they know exactly what you want. And when they can get away with stuff and when they cannot, it's absolutely amazing how much some dogs can read a human.
Yeah.
And I think the only way you can figure that out is spending a lot of time with them. And that's just, I've been on such a pattern now, no matter what, I let them dogs out and I let them come up in the shop with me, whatever. And I let them have their free time where they can just run and play. But when they jump in the back of that truck and they about blow through that box, they spin around in there and they know exactly what they're going to do.
Yep.
And I think that was taught because of time spent with them dogs. And you see a lot of guys when lion season opens, their dogs have been locked up for 6 months. They've been getting fed. And then a couple weeks before season, they pound some exercise into them. Then they go out and their dogs are out of gas.
Right.
And I haven't seemed to have that problem. They're always in shape and they're ready to go at moment's notice. And I think that's a big key, especially for the hound guys that are just starting with this deal. I think the wife deal is a really big thing. If your wife does not agree with you having dogs or she hates your dog, I think you need a
new wife.
You need to get it figured out. Yeah. Yeah, you got to figure it out because it's a bad deal. I've seen a lot of guys lose their hounds because of they're losing their families because they're either doing too much hunting or not involving the family or jealousy between the wife and the dogs. I see that a lot. But
I've been guilty of that myself. You know, I took vacations and different stuff, and it was always centered around dogs. And every once in a while, you got to wake up and realize that the family doesn't need that all the time. You know, sometimes it's good to go do some things that they want to do. And my wife has taught me that. She loves the dogs. She's involved with the dogs. You know, we have puppies. She's like, oh, you're going to have another litter of puppies. But within 2 hours of those puppies being born, she's out there looking at them. And then she's taking, you know, she wants to take care of them. And it's really cool. And that's another reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because you absolutely involve your family in everything from antelope hunting to deer hunting to, you know, whatever you're doing. That kind of brings up a question. So you're so far out here on this ranch, are you with your kids? You guys homeschool your kids? You send them to school, or what's the status on that?
No, my wife Abby, she's a fourth grade school teacher.
Okay.
In town.
Yeah.
She takes the kids to school and she does she definitely deserves the Mother of the Year because she does it all. I don't go to town, you know, like I told you, I don't go to town. I call her and be like, honey, I need a roll of Copenhagen, a couple cases of beer, and about 4 bags of dog food.
Yeah.
She's like, you're going to have to come to town sometime. I was like, not if you keep bringing me dog food, Copenhagen, and beer. I'm good. I'm absolutely good.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's, man. Nope, kids go to public school, and my little boy Parker, and he's a 9-year-old, and Peyton, she's an 11-year-old, and the only reason that girl got hunter safety is because she wanted to kill a turkey. She didn't want nothing else to do with anything. She's like, I need hunter safety because I'm going to kill a turkey.
Yeah.
I was like, perfect. So we went and got it. She got the biggest turkey on the place, man. It was fantastic.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
But it is. That hunting, I've hunted a lot, and I love chasing mule deer with a bow and spotting, stalking antelope with a bow. That's a feat in itself because that's tough.
Yes, it is.
And I did it with my recurve this year, which I was super. I did not kill my buck with the recurve, but I did get both my does with the recurve, and that was a lot of fun.
3 antelope.
So I had to grab the compound out to shoot the buck this year. But.
3 antelope limit out there, huh?
Oh, no. No, you can, in my area, I can get 2 bucks and I can get 4 does.
No kidding.
Antelope. And then I can get a buck, a general deer, and I can usually get 2 doe tags also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty.
How do you find time to work?
Fill a freezer. You know, it's after work, man. That's how I do it. It's after work and weekends. That's why I don't rifle hunt, because October's 7 days a week and it's busy.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys.
But I still find time to spend time with them hounds and get some good hunting in. But.
Well, Chase.
It's all about managing your time.
That's right. That's right. Prioritizing. You work when it's time to work. You hunt when you can and try to get your work done early so you can hunt more.
That's right. And like this year, me and my little boy wanted to do a son and dad trip because that little boy hunts with me. If I have them hounds in the truck, he's sitting in that pickup.
That's cool.
And, you know, and he really enjoys it. And, of course, he has to be the gunner.
Right.
So, you know, we don't kill our coons. I was pretty lucky this year. I got into a hot spot of coons, and this was probably my best year coon hunting. And I caught over 50 coons, and we shot 5 of them. And my boss was like, "You're not killing them coons?" Like, no. I was like, "If I kill them, I have nowhere to hunt."
Right.
And so I'm tired of driving to other states to go coon hunting or on the other side of the mountain and begging people to let me go run coons. And so when we have them here, I'm going to keep them. So,
what's he say?
So it's a.
What's he say about? Is he good with it?
And me and him, oh yeah, he don't care. Yeah, them coons ain't going to hurt nothing. We're running. Culture around here, no farm. So yeah, they're not going to hurt nothing out here. All they're going to eat is mine.
Right.
Our creeks don't have crawfish in them, or
yeah.
You know, I think that, and you know, we have some bullhead in our creeks, and
Well, good stuff. You're cutting out on me a little bit, Luke. I don't know what's going on with our connection here, but we'll have to edit this part out.
Okay.
Oh, there you are. You're back, Luke. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. We'll do a little fancy editing on that part.
All right, perfect.
But, Luke, I just want to tell you I appreciate you jumping on the podcast with us tonight and letting the houndsmen across the United States get to know you and taking us to an interesting part of the world, Northeast Wyoming. It's not some place that a lot of people think about hounds and houndsmen a lot, but I know that just from following you on social media that you got it going on out there. I wanted to talk to you about that pack of hounds and I think it's just a lot of good stuff there. So I really appreciate you coming on.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate you inviting me on, and it was a pleasure. It was a good talk. So
you bet. You bet, Luke. Hey,
so I really appreciate it.
Yep, stay in touch. And until I get through that country and we can turn hounds loose together, you follow your hounds and I'll follow mine.